Okay. Well, I think we've got a quorum, so I'd like to welcome everyone to the OR Development Workshop. This is the, I guess, the eighth edition in the series. And the plan today was to kind of talk about the process of adding tabs to Fire Portal and OR, kind of from a developer's perspective, following up on the architecture discussion a couple of weeks ago. So let's see. We did the roll call already, and sorry, so far I've heard Ken, Mike, Peter, Tim, and Todd. Is there anybody else who's on?
No.
We got regrets from Michael and from Mike Bennett. So I think that's everybody that we expected.
For your information, Mike, I mean, I got confirmation from Mike Bennett that he will be here next Tuesday, which is the important one.
Oh, good.
Talking about coordinating content, and one of the discussions was where does his content go?
Right.
Or how we federate it or something like that. And he said he's got that on his calendar.
Okay.
That's the context where I got his regrets for today, actually.
I see. Okay. Good. I'm glad he'll be here. Be here next week for that for the content discussion.
Yes, since you and Mike Michael Grinninger are running next Tuesday, so send me some abstracts or things that you want to put onto the session page.
Yeah, I don't think I quite remembered that I was organizing that one too, but I can work with Michael on that. So.
All right, if you please.
Yeah. I
think you were because we were going to talk about Federation.
Federation, okay. And perhaps some of the SOCOP plans for content as well.
Evidently, yes.
Sorry, has large and coordinating. No, okay. Let's see. So I had hoped to kind of get some more chance to play with the, to work with the tab mechanism in code, you know, before the telecon. I actually didn't get a chance to do that, but I did get go back over Paul Alexander's updated notes on that, and which, as I recall, actually changed, you know, fairly substantially, but seemed to be fairly complete in terms of their current approach for adding tabs. Ken or others, have you done some more work with that recently, or particularly tried working with the graphics with GIMP or other tools?
No, I haven't, although my it's a former student of mine, Maximo. He's busy working on this issue.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what he's going to come up with, but actually he had a somewhat different problem. His gatekeeper software is a web service, which is good, but it's in SOAP. And the code we have from BioPortal uses REST.
Okay.
And but that's not it turns out what I did, I had code laying around and I fixed it up a bit. I have a mechanism for taking any SOAP web service it's in Java, and deploying it as a web service that will accept both SOAP and REST simultaneously. So if you ask it in REST, it'll give you the REST response. If you ask it in SOAP, it'll give you the SOAP response.
Okay.
So it's... Yeah. So that should take care of this problem. It's an interesting wrinkle.
Yeah. So you take you basically take a WSL definition and generate both the SOAP and generate a REST wrapper essentially, or
it's a little trickier than that. I actually use the annotations in the implementation.
Ah. Okay.
Does REST use XML the same way that SOAP does? Ravi here.
Oh, hi, Ravi.
Oh, hi, Ravi.
REST is quite different. It's it encodes the parameters for a method for an operation in the URL rather than in XML.
Oh, I see.
So when you get the request on the server side, you're facing this complicated URL rather than this XML structure that would be easy to deserialize.
The URL is modified based on REST representational state transfer.
Well, it's the whole point of the representational state transfer is that you're dealing with URLs. So anyway, yeah, but I mean, I set it up so you could do both on the same server at the same time, but it in effect meant that I had to basically re-implement the whole dispatch mechanism that Java Web Services has. Which turned out not to be as hard as you'd think.
As far as payload is concerned, is it handled similarly, or there is no payload in REST services?
REST services do have payloads. REST is very complicated.
Yes, I don't understand too well, but SOAP, yes, a little bit.
Hey, Ken?
Yeah?
REST is more complicated than SOAP?
Oh, big time.
Yes.
It's a lot more complicated.
In the sense
SOAP
that I don't know it.
SOAP is quite a simple thing compared to REST.
SOAP is?
Yeah.
And are you accounting for all the infrastructure and machinery that goes on behind the scenes to deal with SOAP?
No.
Well, you see, REST has to have all that machinery too.
Does it? I thought it was much more simple-minded and lightweight. You just jam everything.
Suppose that you have suppose you post something, then your source is going to be an XML. You have to proceed to deserialize that.
Possibly, okay.
So, yeah, you don't win. I mean, there's no way to win.
Okay.
People in REST think, oh, this is so much simpler, and then you look at the code, and it's ungodly.
So effectively, you're saying you have to do all the same things, but for REST, you have to do it manually as opposed to having some infrastructure to call on. Is that it?
That's basically it, yeah.
Okay.
There is no such thing like WSDL in REST, is there?
Well, there's
some
things like WSDL.
There's WSDL and WSDL 2.0 actually specifies REST.
That's right. Okay.
Ken, I have two requests, one request and one question. The request is, please document some of the salient points you're talking about. The question is, you said you have to re-implement the dispatch mechanism. Is that already done or already prototyped? And if so, which server? We now have three. So we have test, dev, and sandbox. Or none. I mean, you could have done it on, let's say, a local implementation on your desktop or laptop, of course.
Okay, well, Maximo's working on it.
Okay.
He hasn't yet gotten to the point where he's deployed it.
Okay, so this is planned.
Right. The point is that the code is there. You deploy it. It's very simple to deploy. You just run it's kind of self-deploying. You don't need a container for it. So
does it run sort of in parallel to the OOR, or is it intended to actually be integrated within BioPortal? Or
the current plan is for it to be independent.
I see. Okay.
And that you just run these REST calls to the gatekeeper service. The idea is to try to keep these things as modular as possible, so you could plug in something else if you wanted to.
But Ken, if for some reason the gatekeeper crashes, what happens to the OOR instance?
If the gatekeeper crashes?
Yes. Well, you're saying they're not integrated, but obviously there must be some coupling, so I was just trying to understand the extent. Maybe I got confused by some of the statements you made.
Okay, the gatekeeper runs as a separate process, but it's multi-threaded, so if for some reason one of your threads crashes, that doesn't mean that the whole service crashes.
So can I assume that basically it will handle essentially the submission process to BioPortal? And
right, that's the idea.
If it was unavailable, you couldn't submit new ontologies, but you could still access the ones that were there, right?
Correct. So it's still you can still access everything, just like in BioPortal. It's only when you hit the submit button that you will be sending a request to this web service.
Okay. And I assume it's using the same users, user ID and passwords and keys as the as BioPortal is using.
Yeah. The idea would be that this web service would then use the BioPortal as a web service to get that information, because it would act under admin privilege.
Oh, I see. Okay, because I was wondering. I mean, there is some tracking, I think, of who actually submits the ontology for doing subsequent updates to it and things like that, right?
Yeah, we have to work that out. Because from BioPortal's point of view, it's the gatekeeper that's doing everything.
Okay.
So it wouldn't actually know any of this.
I mean, one alternative would be essentially have you log in with your BioPortal, you know, access, you know, pass your BioPortal user ID and password to the gatekeeper. Kind of a man-in-the-middle approach.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah, that's something to think about, how that would work. Because, you know, this kind of administrative thing shouldn't be... shouldn't be part of the gatekeeper. Is that right, or should it? Is the gatekeeper responsible for usernames and passwords?
Well,
that's part of the plan.
It's clearly not the only thing that needs to be aware of that. So probably in terms of ultimately being responsible, probably no. But it could potentially use the, you know, authentication and authorization services from BioPortal.
Yeah, usually, I mean, isn't it? I think it's usually the case that you just have a kind of a layer in between your service and the kind of the outside world that handles all this authentication.
Yeah, I mean, the ideal thing might be to use something like OpenID.
Yeah. So it's just. None of these services should be concerned with that because they're behind this kind of wall.
Right. Now, I thought...
And I thought BioPortal was moving in that direction.
I thought that as well. I was trying to actually
remember
where we heard that.
Right. They did mention that they were adopting something which is on their architectural diagram for a long time, and then they said they were finally implementing it.
Do you remember if it was OpenID or if it was something?
It wasn't OpenID. It was something. I mean, if you, let's go to their architectural diagram. Oh, in the meantime, if you guys refresh and look under 3B, MB, see if I captured the gist of the discussion while I try to look up the architecture.
Okay, at some point, it seems that it would be nice to actually have a presentation for MaxML on the Keeper software.
He gave a presentation and a demo once.
Okay.
At one of our meetings in the past, I think... if you look it up, you might be able to find it. What's happening now is not the development of Gatekeeper, but rather integrating it. Because at the time that he developed the Gatekeeper, there wasn't any OR to integrate with.
Okay.
So he was basically developing a whole OR.
Okay.
Albeit a really simple-minded one, you know, it didn't have much of an interface.
Okay. Yeah, if we can include the link back to that, that would be helpful. I had forgotten about that.
Yeah, I'm pasting the reference. Says ACEGI security framework. Does that mean anything? On the chat. So there's an authentication manager, authentication provider, security request filter, access handler. That's between the Spring framework and REST. They even have SOAP web services, obviously not implemented in the original architecture.
So if we have both SOAP and REST, then it should be pretty easy for
on paper.
On paper, yeah, let's wait to see. Practice. Yeah, you get these little wrinkles when you start actually trying to do the integration.
Right. So I
think at some point, I mean, they had this all along, I mean, for years, but then, like maybe 6 months ago, or after Ray joined, they said they were going to start to put that layer in place.
Yeah, so I'm not familiar with this security framework. I think I probably looked it up when they mentioned it before, but...
Mm-hmm. But I guess if they have this framework, then our keeper will just make calls to that, right?
That would be the ideal approach. Yeah.
We wouldn't have to implement anything.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm looking. I did just a quick Google on a Fiji or whatever, and I see. You know, one thing is a tutorial, a CG and security in 1 hour.
Okay.
Another one that says configuration of a CG is a complex task. So that actually doesn't make me necessarily think that integration would be trivial. But.
Well, this is Grails plug in.
Yeah.
The CG plug in.
Okay. But it, I mean, it sounds like that's a somewhat open issue, but it's good that there's some mechanisms that may help with that.
Okay, but back to the other discussion. Does the what I captured below 3BMB sort of comes to a close approximation to what you guys were saying? Ken, particularly.
Oh, sorry, I'm writing something up on the chat. Just give me a second.
Where on the page, Peter?
What? Where?
You gave us a location on the page?
3BMB, yeah, the session page.
So, Ken, did Maxima also add a tab to access this web service?
I bet no.
Well... We haven't yet looked at that issue. We're more looking at just the basic integration with the services.
Okay. You've been focusing more on the back end, and you just essentially have a separate URL that you access to do the gate to submit to the keeper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of occurred to me there was, you know, the tab mechanism seems like it's more for sort of front-end integration rather than back-end integration, although maybe it...
Yeah, at the moment, in theory, all we have to do is just modify what happens when you push the submit button.
Right, although I don't know if they particularly have... Well, it would be a good question to actually see if they have hooks that make it easy to do that. So that wouldn't really be systemic.
Relatively.
But that would be essentially just by modifying the Rails framework, right?
No, all they do is, when you hit submit, it's basically just forwarding it to another window. It's essentially the same thing that happens if you click on the tab.
Right, so you just modify the configuration of what gets invoked when you hit submit.
Right. Creating a new window is pretty easy.
Right.
You know, they have this script that does all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go to the place where you press the button. That's also fairly simple code. And you just change it so that it goes to your window rather than to the one it's already would normally go to.
Right, right.
Come to think of it, I mean, Mike and Ken, you've probably seen sort of messages flying about on the BioPortal support list, I mean, earlier, but less now, about like API keys, remember?
Yes.
People having problems. I mean, this is probably this a CG framework at work. So at least there's some sort of security layer in between the web service calls.
Right, right. It's definitely there. So
which was there before? Yeah. So this is actually in place, and probably with the code that we're currently looking at. So.
Huh.
So maybe Todd can tell us, I mean, when you reverse engineer the architecture, did that come to mind?
What now?
A CG security framework.
No, I didn't get into that level of detail.
Yeah,
I had a hard time trying to understand the whole operation of the thing, and I just was focused on trying to get some of the diagrams out there so people have some way to provide some understanding of what's going on. So, no, Peter, sorry.
Peter, I'm not sure if that actually is, because the API keys are static. And I would assume that OpenID or other things would have some mechanisms basically for, maybe it's just HTTPS, but basically for, you know, doing session keys or encrypting those things. Because you can actually, if you actually log in, you can find out what your API key is.
Okay.
So it might be one of the pieces. And maybe it's in conjunction with just HTTPS. So I know, that's a good question. Because originally, you know, anybody could invoke the services, and now they require you to specify an API key.
Mm.
But I think most of the services are still just on HTTP. So if you snooped once, I don't think it would actually be that hard to do something as somebody else.
Okay, if we have questions, or maybe questions for the BioPortal people, can someone maybe capture that onto the chat? And take ownership to ask them if it relates to our implementation. Obviously.
Yeah, let's see. I at least put the question on the website here.
Okay. So we'll either Mike or Ken try to find this out. Ken probably, or Maximo.
Hopefully Maximo can encounter this.
Is Maximo on the OR dev list? Because Paul Alexander is, so Ray Ferguson is, so that would be the place to ask. Yes. Maximo is. Assuming he still has his NEU email address.
Yeah, he still does.
So he still has that address. I assume he's graduated, right?
Oh, yeah, he graduated some
time ago. So you guys don't recall everybody's email addresses?
Eventually they do.
Yeah, so he is on the list as mgurmend@ccs.neu.edu. So maybe you make a note and ask him if he's still on that list or if he wants to subscribe with another identity or something.
Let me give you the email address that I use. Because I do believe that they eventually.
So shall I just subscribe this Gmail address?
You should switch to the new address. I got it in the chat.
All right, I got that. So I'll subscribe him with your permission.
Oh, yeah. He's...
Okay, done. So next time you talk to him, tell him I've unsubscribed him from the NEU address and subscribed him on the with his Gmail address. Both OR Forum and OR Dev.
Okay, good.
So I'm trying to think if there are other enhancements that would likely use the tab mechanism near term. And I'm thinking particularly in whether SOCOP would. And I'm not seeing an obvious case for doing that, although it would be nice to actually get some more experience with doing that. So as you say, Ken, all you really need to do is to modify the dispatch for the for the submit rather than necessarily adding a new tab, right?
Well, yeah, until such a time as we can, you know, more easily handle, you know, extending the tabs, which is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the moment, I don't see any problem with adding this feature without going through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Again, if we start changing the tabs, well, you know, there are all sorts of issues, you know, UI issues, you know, we should address about exactly what should be in the tabs and so on, which I think I posted something about it. Didn't get a lot of responses. I think, Todd, you responded?
Responded to?
I posted something on the our dev list about...
Yeah, Leo responded.
Yeah.
Leo responded.
I may have responded too, Ken. I don't remember.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
To Leo, though.
Yeah, I think Leo and I had similar opinions. Is that correct, Peter?
Pretty close. Yeah, I think he...
So the notion of a constant set of or fairly invariant set of tabs... across the top and then page-dependent tabs per page or something like that?
Yeah, I think we already had some conclusions and we were just sort of running this by the rest of the community to see if there are huge objections. If not, I guess we should just continue to go that direction, which is fine.
So for the other OOR bioportal instances, like... MMI or DAC. Do we know if they're adding tabs or customizations?
I know MMI was implementing or making modifications on a very, very early code base, like 1.0, and they have actually not continued with development much at all. So they continue with the application, the use of the repository to handle various vocabularies and so on. But actually they weren't modifying the codes anymore.
So are they just running with an older version of BioPortal or are they just
very old? I mean
very old.
When BioPortal doesn't even look like what it looks like now. I mean, in terms of the UI. And of course, they modified a lot of the UI, so theirs don't look even look close to BioPortal even then, and they look totally different.
Okay.
And Oak Ridge's implementation is from, I guess, one iteration prior to ours. So you remember at one time they had a few people from Puerto Rico who came for a summer internship?
Okay.
This was like before 2.6, I think it was 2.0, and they installed that, and they are still running that one.
Okay, so that's probably the 0.3 appliance or something? Because I thought they were running the VM.
Pre-appliance days.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that's sort of, you remember we implemented a bunch before the appliance days?
Right.
So that's that version, 2.0 version. And then 0.3 came out, and then which we did manage to install. 0.4 we installed. 0.5 came out, which we did install.
Right.
Or have installed.
Right.
So I think Oak Ridge is now trying to install 0.6. No, 0.5. But I don't know whether they are moving ahead with that, because summer is coming, and I guess that's probably sort of the next summer intern's job.
Okay.
They have this one guy by the name of Giri, who's a good, a really good person, but his focus is on sort of integrating and putting in the search mechanism, integrating that to the rest of the thing which they call the Mercury system.
Right. Okay.
So their focus is not sort of an ontology repository per se. But I think that they're bringing in a new intern for the summer, and that's probably what the new intern might be doing.
Okay. So probably I was wondering if we could leverage some of the customization experience from these groups, and it sounds like it's at best indirect or using earlier techniques.
I don't think, to answer your question, it would be no. The Stanford people are still sort of the best resource to work with.
Right. I was kind of thinking, I don't think any of their tabs are quite implemented using this approach, although things like the projects is probably close to this, to the example that they, to Paul's example tab, where they add, a new database row essentially for projects and kind of link it to the ontologies that are being used.
Well, then.
And Ray had sort of said that he had kind of modeled these against the, based on the Protégé plugins, right? So it doesn't seem like, we have a set of plugins that have emerged yet, although that certainly could still happen.
Yeah, when given a chance, I mean, one can casually ask them who else is doing tabs, because I mean they're a huge contingency within the biomedical arena. Who has implemented the appliances. And some are doing implementations, because every now and then you can see questions like those floating around in the support list.
Right.
So I'm almost, I mean, the BioPortal guys will be at Semtec.
Mm-hmm.
You remember last time we were at Semtec, Paul Alexander was there too?
Yes.
And
yes.
I was seeing a message from Natasha Noy asking people to attend or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that that group will be there. So when you run into them, casually ask all the questions we need to ask.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
probably would be a good time, a good chance.
Right, right. Yeah, I see they're also doing a protege and OWL workshop before SEMTEC, which I assume is, yeah, so people can kind of get the background before going to the conference. Yeah, so it's close by. So okay, so kind of going in the agenda, so I guess I was starting to address the question already of, you know, how we can continue to engage other potential code contributors. So folks have any other thoughts on that?
Well, I tried something like that a few years ago at one of the what are they called now, Mike? The SIDS meetings?
Yeah.
In particular, Catherine and her team, Catherine Lasky, to see if she could motivate some of her grad students to do something about this. And obviously, Ken has tried that approach, too, with some success.
Right.
Other than that, I don't know if you want to hand out flyers at SEMTEC, something, Mike, you know.
Yeah. So, Tim, are you using OR at this point?
We're not at this point. We're still open to it, but you know, priorities change and you know, things come on the front burner and you have to put off fires and whatnot. So we're interested in revisiting this.
Okay. Have you thought at all about you know sort of additional features that you might implement through tabs or some other mechanism on top of OR as well, or?
No. Obviously, I've been out probably, it's been a couple of months that participating, so I'm trying to catch up.
Okay. Right. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Yep. Yeah, I probably have a resource that can start looking into it in more detail in the next month or so.
Good.
So hopefully we can contribute something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you know, within SOCOP, you know, we're kind of figuring out what the big things to do next are. So you know, there might be some opportunity there, and it may be Nejun Zhao, who's a professor at the University of Maryland, you know, is interested in accessing OR through the services layer, I think particularly for some of the alignment functions. And so that may be a way to engage some people as well. So. Okay.
Back to Todd, I remember it was fairly positive at that time when you were talking to Kathy Lasky. Will you continue that conversation?
Well, I don't see it. Well, that was several years ago. Were you at that meeting, Mike? I don't remember.
I think so, yes. Uh-huh.
That's when it was still OIC. And I didn't seem to go too far. I can ask her again, but I wouldn't expect a huge response. You know, I think that sort of development doesn't seem to be her bailiwick.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's particularly focused on probabilistic reasoning and things like that.
Yeah. And I don't know anyone else over at GMU whose interest, there must be some people, but I don't know them, who may be interested in such development. Are you aware of any, Mike?
Nobody can think of offhand. Yeah.
Sorry, Peter.
Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, there are some folks there on the space involved in spatial as well. So, you know, going through SOCOP might be a way. Although they haven't been directly involved in the SOCOP effort.
But I guess the more specific question or immediate question is, if we want to approach these people, do we have a specific laundry list of things we might like to recommend?
Right, right.
That might be a little easier sell than saying, oh, by the way, we need some warm bodies. Got any?
I don't think we need warm bodies as much as, I mean, I think people who would run an instance, getting them into the OR.NET circle and then convince them, if they are doing customization, to join us at these meetings so that all the customizations or all the code development are coordinated.
Oh, okay.
We,
I guess I misunderstood.
Yeah, we don't all do the same things and repeat each other, and also we try to go around the same sort of architectural framework that allows each of us to coordinate the contributions.
I guess I misunderstood your strategy, Peter.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, would be a reasonable approach. I mean, but it's up to us here.
Well, in that case, some people in one part of Raytheon, Kevin Lynch, Michael, was, I thought they were going to put up an instance of OOR, but I haven't heard back from them. I can put it on a note to myself to ping them and see what they're doing, because they may have some resources to start doing some work if they actually get it running. But I haven't spoken with them in a couple of months. I'll contact them and see what they're doing with that, if anything, or if they have any idea that they are going to do something or not. Mike, have you met Joe Sortelli from down there?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the person that sort of comes to mind as someone who'd actually do the hard coding or actual modifications.
Right, right. Yeah, getting him involved would be terrific. So
yes.
And,
sure.
They may be at Semtech as well. I'm not. I need to go back and check the agenda. But
okay. Well, if you see him there, you know, it'd be probably better to ping him in person.
Okay.
An email.
Right, right. Although we could do a multi-pronged approach as well. So.
Well, I'll copy you on the email.
Okay.
And again, if anyone's going to Semtech, if you want to hand out handbills or something, you know. We don't have any glossy flyers for OR yet, do we?
No, I mean,
I'm teasing.
Would it be useful?
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
So, was the name Nai Jun just now?
So Nai Jun Zhao is the professor at Maryland.
Okay.
N-A-I-J-U-N-C-H-O-U.
Yeah, C-H-O-U, yep. Got that. Yeah.
And he's one of the other co-PIs on SOCOP.
Oh. Do you think you can convince him to come join us at these calls? Or at least at the right calls?
I don't know. I think maybe we need to kind of... I think he probably needs to figure out exactly what he's doing first and then see whether it's something that... It just essentially uses OR through the services interface, or is something that would actually be integrated more closely. So, you know, he doesn't even attend all the SOCOP meetings, so I'd be hesitant to try to, you know, pull him into this regularly, but I can certainly make sure he's aware of it.
Okay. Yeah, please. Oh.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
your meeting tomorrow or something, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, he's done some nice demos in general. So, having things that he's been working particularly with mapping of different land use terms in different parts of the country, and even in D.C., you know, Virginia, Maryland, and the district have entirely different codes that they use for. You know, the same types of land use. Okay, so kind of moving on to the next item in terms of our code development focus, and particularly, you know, some of the recent trends, you know, with big data. Are there thoughts on things that we should change or be focused on?
The one of the big thing is whether we stay just on RDFR and first order logic, or do we extend a little further to see how we could accommodate database schemas or XML schemas,
right?
Or sort of
UML is the other obvious candidate.
Yeah, UML, yeah.
Basically, I mean, we're getting a little closer to things like XMDR, I think, if we do that.
If you remember, we used to have XMDR people on the team.
Right.
Bruce Bachmeier was here sort of regularly back then, and Frank Oaken was here just last meeting or something.
Right.
So it's not totally out of reach if we have a strategy on how to sort of bring these things back into the fold. Yeah, one of the worries I have is if we just continue in this way and the rest of the world goes LOD and we might be standing in a corner watching. So I guess this is the right place to talk about whether we should or what we should be doing or could be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I see the linked open data as largely compatible, although, Peter, I think you sent some messages out about OData, and I saw also a corresponding reference to GData. And I actually hadn't been aware of those before. Can you provide a little more context? I guess OData is the Microsoft standard for proposed standard for open data that they're trying to push through OASIS.
There was a whole bunch of people. IBM, I mean, all the big name people. IBM, Microsoft, SAP, Citrix. So, I mean, all the right players coming together to do a new standard called Open Data, which is very interesting. And it's very new. I mean, they're just circulating the prospective charter for that.
Well, they actually had a set of standards that were up to like 3.0 that Microsoft, I think, had developed. You know, with accessing it through JSON and through a couple other different APIs and a fairly full set of APIs. So it looked like it was actually fairly developed.
I mean, as always. I mean, when these people come together to do a standard, I mean, it's not developing anything from scratch.
Right.
Or usually just rubber stamping something they already have.
Mm-hmm.
But the amazing thing is, I mean, the list of players seems amazing.
Yeah, although, I mean, there's a lot of overlap between that and the players in the Semantic Web as well. I mean, IBM has been part of that, and certainly SAP has too.
Has it? I mean, SAP and Microsoft, I mean, not it.
Microsoft less, although there's certainly been some, you know, awareness and you know, acknowledgement there. So, you know, I saw one top-level characterization that I'm not quite sure I fully got all that was intended, but I mean, they characterized it as, you know, if the web was basically built of linked Microsoft Word documents rather than HTML documents, that was what you would get with OData. So, do you have any more insight into really how it compares with?
I just forwarded that sort of prospectus to the list,
okay.
And that was it. I mean, I totally have no idea what or when they're doing, but I intend to at least go join their first meeting to hear a little bit more about them, and if it's interesting enough, I will stay on as an observer so that
yeah.
at least their email exchange will fly by in my inbox.
Right. So you're a member of Oasis. So
I'm a member of Oasis, yes.
Peter, you read the prospectus, though, didn't you?
Did I what?
You read that prospectus from the Oasis link you sent out.
Yes, sort of. Scanned through it.
But it all talks about syntax, and they're missing the problem, as usual. I mean, they explicitly say they don't want to get into the issue of effectively the content.
Yeah, and they don't want to do and mapping is out of scope and things like that.
So I didn't understand what they were getting at, other than Microsoft wants to push something on us, or Google, or whomever.
That's usually the case, as I mentioned. When they try to do a standard, it's just that, I mean, whatever they have been doing for the last 5 years, they want it to be an international standard now or something.
But I guess that flies in the face of my way of thinking.
No, I mean, it's not that I condone with what they're doing. I mean, even if I'm going to observe, I'm just
trying to
find out about what they are doing.
Yeah, I understand. But I don't think what they have in mind bears much relationship to what we need to do or have in mind, unless I miss something big time.
No, but they, whatever they do, probably have some bearing on whatever we choose to do.
Only to the extent that A, people accept what they do in large numbers, and then B, I would think it would just be a facade that we'd put on top of things if we had to conform to some sort of interface standard that they have adopted. Right or no?
No, I would say yes. I mean, the fact that we are trying an approach that is highly versatile and flexible allows us to do that much more easily.
Okay, well, I guess then it just occurred to me perhaps the only thing that they may provide of value is some standard for search criteria or something like that. Or search, you know, a search interface. If there's a standard way to search things, that's not too bad. That would be useful to use.
We'll find out. So what is GData?
Well, I saw a link. You know, it was basically looking at the Wikipedia page on OData. You know,
uh-huh.
It referred also to Google's competing GData.
Uh-huh.
I didn't look. Find much more detail on that. Although I was a little curious, you know, I mean, this also seems like it's potentially related to schema.org. It would be interesting to see if there's a connection there. And, you know, all of us, I assume, have probably saw the announcements for Google's Knowledge Graph, you know, the last week or so.
Yes, you can't miss that one.
And with, you know, it's easy to, at least I found it was easy to kind of go out and kind of walk through their examples, and it looked like they had good coverage of essentially the things that are covered in DBpedia, with the exception of companies. But, you know, no real detail on how it's implemented underneath. So I'm a little curious if it's actually using. Perhaps it's actually using some of the GData ideas, you know, using GData or schema.org or something else. And I haven't seen anything yet on how to actually access the graph programmatically, as opposed to just, you know, having it appear, you know, on the right-hand side in search results.
This graph that you are mentioning, does it also show connection to Hadoop and MapReduce, or it's that you are talking, or
it's all data. So I mean, underneath they may well be using those, but I didn't see any direct connection there. So I mean, you could try it, and
so
apparently they were doing it incrementally. But if you do like a search, you know, in Google for Vincent van Gogh was their example that they used. You basically see, you know, a box on the side that has essentially the Wikipedia data and then links to where he was born, where he died, and parents and siblings. And you can actually sort of walk the graph based on that information.
I see. But the search, underlying search are different techniques, so how are you going to find common search? Common search would probably take things like entity extraction or indexing or some of these semantic web kind of notations. So how many will you...
I think they're doing essentially this in parallel with, you know, their traditional search. And this set of terms are essentially mixing in the results from the knowledge graph into the search results. And in the little overview video that they showed, they talked about some of the kind of obvious data sources, like DDpedia and I'm drawing a blank.
I was thinking more of a general standard for search. So if a standard were to evolve, it would have to incorporate these various ways of searching, wouldn't it?
Well, to be honest, I don't think Google is interested in a standard for search. I think they're interested in just being
the provider. But
so,
we would be.
Yeah.
But we would be interested. But then underneath, we have to branch out and cater to each of these types of searches. That'd be a mammoth task. So should we even be, well, categories of search could be the next way out if we can't define a standard for such types.
I think there's definitely a emerging area of semantic search, and some engines are really dedicated specifically to doing that, and then Bing and Google are kind of adding that, as far as I can tell, kind of on the side.
Would have a unique way. So Wolfram would have another way. LexisNexis will have another way.
Right.
So how are we going to...
Right. Yeah, Wolfram, I think, is a good example, actually, in many cases. And partly it's distinguished by whether you actually get objects back or whether you get documents.
Someone's clock is off.
Oh, that was the doorbell, actually, for me, but rather than the clock, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Along the line of this graph search, I guess those of you who are on Ontolog Forum would have noticed, there's this group that is called New4J. Whom Dwayne Nichols is a huge fan of, and he's arranging a session for the community to look more closely. And I see a lot of activities like that going on. I'm pasting another link for those who have noticed not too long ago, probably February, March, Cray started delivering something called Eureka. That's a universal RDF integration knowledge appliance, which is a sort of graph-based search appliance.
Right. We've actually looked at some of the earlier versions of that.
They've been working on that. But now they sort of package it up. I had some behind the scene exchange with Leo as well, and so on. So,
if any such API or standard develops, that'd be good. It would make such reachable by others and in the open communities. That would be great.
RDF. That's it. I think we might want to sort of ask ourselves again, should we be fine-tuning or tweaking our course to in view of these things?
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
it definitely impacts connectivity of the OOR repository to the various tools or engines for reasoning, for search, for further development of ontologies. All three, OOR has to somehow be able to connect to these areas.
I'm not sure, Peter. I understand that there's going to be this interest in these simple solutions, but I don't think that we can morph ourselves, you know, so far out of the original intent that we'll be successful in any way.
So, like, what we stay as a repository, and others can do these things like search and reasoning on top of that?
Well, how are you going to reason over XML schema?
Oh, through namespace mapping is one, and then saying you match or you don't match is at least one yes-no simple reasoning, but it could be more combinatorial.
Well, okay, I agree that that's certainly a possibility. Who's going to do that work to develop all of that?
No, but I don't have the knowledge to do the actual development.
So I'm not saying we stop doing what we're doing, but we should be mindful of sort of major developments. I mean, craze these people coming together to do old data. I mean, these are not sort of pedestrians. When they do it, I mean, it does make major impact on how things are developing. So we're not sort of changing our course, but we should tweak them so that we stay relevant.
Oh, I agree, Peter. It just sounded like
Todd.
Yes,
Todd. Let me try addressing this issue of reasoning. The reasoning over something like a schema or XML schema, relational schema, comes not from the schema per se, but from the mappings. So if you map a schema to an ontology, and then you can reason through that ontology, especially if you have multiple schemas mapped to an ontology.
Oh, I'm sure there's
and
lots of
you
solutions.
Can do also multiple domains through vocabularies mapping into these XML elements. And then based on the role or whatever object you are describing, its properties, then you can reason on them.
The point is that there's something that the OOR offers even to something like a relational schema.
Based on the presumption that you have ontologies under the hood there that will help you do that work or meet that goal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
that would be our strength. I mean, when people stop at the schema, we provide the underlying things the upper ontologies and then the super domain ontologies and then the domain ontologies and then the schemas. If we provide all that, I mean that maps back.
When explained that way, then I certainly agree that would be a very nice service to provide. But the number of presumptions that precede it is quite large.
But if we don't think about it, it's not going to happen at all.
True. You're right.
I mean, we can think about it and say, no, that's not what we are going to do. But
it'll happen at stages, right? I mean, even small amounts of mapping can have a huge impact. You know, just take a database schema, just say two database schemas, and you map them both to some simple ontology. Suddenly you have a lot of reasoning capability you never had before.
And also interoperability.
And interoperability.
Yeah.
It is, you don't need to have sophisticated reasoning to have a very impressive demonstration of the capabilities. I think DOE, DOE talk kind of illustrated that. I mean, the pages on their website that are the most popular are relatively simple ones.
Right. Which presentation was that, Ken?
It was last Thursday.
I think
all the presentations on last Thursday were just phenomenal.
Yeah,
and it's just, they show that a little bit of reasoning goes a long way.
And the fact that they could, I mean, with the little bit of reasoning over huge amount of data, makes the case compelling because it touches a lot of things. I mean, like the energy thing, I mean, it touches all the millions and millions of users.
Yes, yes. And I'm thinking of the one OSTI website I keep referring to all the time, Worldwide Search for Science, worldwidescience.org, that uses not exactly the reasoning, but reasoning is embedded in the terms and properties and affinities among concepts that they are looking in their search among large scientific data sets. So reasoning is somehow embedded, but I can't exactly say how. I did a couple of nuclear terms search, and I could see that they have the relationships properly built.
I have to go. Sorry. Peter and Ken, your point is well taken, that those examples show that a little bit of reasoning can go a long way, except in politics. But then it's still not clear to me how we get that capability into OOR in an effective fashion, or doable fashion for that matter.
I mean, one starting thing might be to actually export some of our ontologies in their format, as well as just the mapping aspects.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Right. Right. But the point is to discuss, I mean, the point is not to decide on anything per se or change course. But the point is to discuss it.
Like this export is a possibility. It will become real and then people will start using OOR.
Right.
More people, I mean.
So I think it's certainly interesting that there's a lot more stuff happening in the space.
Right.
You know, which, is one way of, if it's similar but different, the Semantic Web and other communities can still potentially claim some credit for making these things happen or creating some of these, pushing some of these ideas. So.
Yeah, if we could, I mean, export is one, but if we could provide, let's say, some ontology sanctioned peer-reviewed ontology that could be used as lingua franca and then allow people to start mapping database schemas to those domain ontologies and the domain ontologies to the super domain ontologies. I mean, that would be the kind of surface that we will be able to provide that others won't because they don't have all the ontologies in one logical place.
So I should probably drop off in a couple minutes as well. But,
right. So,
had a good.
Thank you.
Right. Mike, could you sort of at least capture that in one or two sentences onto the chat and then wrap us up?
Yeah, I can do that. So let's see.
While I look at the other things. Yeah, originally I said we were good if we had time to maybe revisit that with our priorities, but I guess we'll have to leave that revisitation of the critical tasks to the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. So I captured a couple of thoughts there, I think.
Great.
And let's see, so our next telecon will be next week, focusing again on OR content. So, and then the following week, no telecon because of Sumtech. And then a team meeting, I think, the week after that. So maybe that's an opportunity to report on some of the things. You know, I can try to, one of the things I can do is try to report on some of the activities at Sumtech that week. Do we have anything else we want to cover today?
No. I think it was a very useful meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.